Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Today, a program about joy. We live in a complex world, which can sometimes be overwhelming. It can feel like we're on a roller coaster, up one minute, down the next. In those valleys, which we all experience, how do we find the good? How do we experience joy? WFAE has been exploring that, and we expand on it this hour. Joy to the world. WFAE has been taking a closer look at this in our Finding Joy series. It's our way of offering a bright spot in an often depressing news cycle. But individuals all have moments in their lives where joy is difficult to experience that come from events that are strictly personal. The loss of a loved one or a job, financial hardships, a life-altering medical diagnosis, or just times when things aren't going our way. Finding joy under those circumstances can be difficult. Dr. Stephanie Collier helps people through these moments in her job as Director of Education in the Division of Geriatric Psychiatry at McLean Hospital, the largest teaching hospital at Harvard Medical School, and she joins us for the hour. Welcome to the program. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you've written about finding joy, and I'm just curious, before we launch into this conversation, why you are interested in the topic.
So joy is a very, very interesting core emotion that we all can experience. And as I see patients with various mental health illnesses, I wonder about building resilience and helping them find deeper purposes as part of their healing. Joy is something that we can all learn how to cultivate.
You say that the loss of joy may be a sign of a mental health problem, or it may be a normal response. If it's a normal response to something that we've experienced, is it something that we'll be likely to be able to find again in time? Joy.
Absolutely. It's one of the most normal experiences that we have. So losing joy is a very, very normal experience when something goes awry in our lives. If we lose a person, if we lose a job, it is a very common reaction to feel a loss of joy, but that is temporary. And it becomes a problem only when it persists for weeks, months, years.
Can thinking back to a time when you know you experienced joy help you find it again, or will it make you even more depressed because you don't have it now?
That's a very good question. Sometimes we know what works for us. So especially with older adults, there might be times where a loss of joy happened before and someone found something that helped them overcome that loss. And that is building resilience, and they can use those skills again. For some people, it might be the first time that they experience joy where they feel they just can't get out of whatever tough feelings they're experiencing. And in those patients, we think about what else could be going on, and is this more than the normal response to loss?
And I said, you said that this can be a mental health issue, or it can just be a normal response. If it is a mental health issue, how much more difficult is it to overcome this loss of joy in that case?
It depends on the illness. And for some illnesses, it also depends on the age and the treatment. So even with a course of depression, with or without treatment, people do get better generally after a few months. However, treatment can make overcoming the difficult times a little faster. Mm-hmm. So in a normal response to a loss, we would expect someone to feel joy, even at times, maybe not as much, but they should still have the capacity to feel joy, even with difficult circumstances.
It strikes me, if we're going to spend the hour talking about joy, we ought to define it. Is joy something separate from happiness or feeling happy or at peace?
That's an excellent question. So joy is probably one of the core emotions, but it's different than happiness. It's marked by feelings of pleasure and happiness, but it persists and it's not related to external events. So, for example, someone might feel happy if they receive a good mark or win the lottery, but that fades over time, whereas joy is something deeper that persists. And you can experience joy even in times of grief. You can experience joy at times when life experiences are difficult. It is a persisting feeling, an ability to, it's a sense of purpose, spirituality, something higher. So it's not fleeting and it's stable.
One other psychologist that I read says that joy is the state of feeling freedom, safety, and ease. And it sounds like that person is equating joy with peace. Is that what it is?
So peace is one component. And one of the best ways to improve your ability to cultivate joy is to learn how to be at peace. How to be at peace with difficult situations. How can you cultivate peace? Practices like mindfulness or meditation, those can help you experience joy long term.
And that psychologist, by the way, is Philip Watkins, is with Eastern Washington University. He authored a number of research papers on the topic of joy, and he goes on to say, unlike some other positive emotions like compassion or contentment, experiencing joy often depends on preparing for it rather than spontaneously feeling for it, feeling it rather. Do you understand that, and do you agree with it? And if you agree with it, why does it take work?
It takes work because life is hard. And if we were just reacting to our life circumstances, we probably wouldn't be able to endure such positive feelings over time. So, part of the work in cultivating joy is learning how to accept the situation when life throws you a couple lemons, how to get through them, and how to keep going and to keep feeling positive emotions.
If you're having difficulty finding joy, are you likely depressed? Is it likely from some event that happened or didn't happen, and it's made you unhappy? Is that part of it, or is that just one tiny little part of it?
Well, it depends because, again, it's a normal reaction to lose joy in response to an event, to lose momentary happiness. You might not feel the same levels of pleasure, and that's normal. And even people who are very good at cultivating joy sometimes have days where they struggle. And so we think of it as pathological when it persists, when someone does not have the ability to experience positive emotions weeks or months later, and when it gets to the point where it's interfering with their other activities. We generally don't call things mental illness unless there's significant disability.
You know, I was thinking yesterday as I was getting ready to have this conversation with you, if I'd ever been aware, except for moments here and there, of really being in the moment of experiencing joy. Should we be in that situation most of the time, all of the time, only some of the time? Should we feel the peak of being joyful and then it goes away for a while, so we feel it again when it happens again? How should we consider being in this state of joy?
So there's a paradox. It's called the paradox of happiness, where by trying to feel something, you often actually miss the mark and you don't feel it. So the harder you try sometimes to experience pleasure, the harder it becomes. Joy is something that you might not think of as sort of peaks and valleys, but it's just a state of mind where you build your resilience. So you're not aiming for a pleasure and a release of neurotransmitters, it's maintaining sort of a well-being state.
If your difficulty in finding or experiencing joy comes from external sources, like say the news or your job, you hate your job, or the news depresses you, is the best prescription to stop listening or watching or reading the news, or to find a way to wash away the detrimental effects of your job, or find a new job for that matter, in your off hours? Is that the best prescription, just to find, to not dwell on these things?
So I often recommend to my patients, when I think there is some perpetuating reason that they aren't getting better, to try eliminating or narrowing the time spent on activities that don't produce joy. And it could be the news, it could be other activities. With a job, it becomes more complicated, and it, of course, varies based on the individual and their needs and wants. But what we do know about joy is when you're in line with your values, when you're doing work that's meaningful, where you have a sense of purpose, you can get to that state of joy. And that's actually part of ways to cultivate joy, is to identify what brings you purpose and then to connect to those activities.
Is it easy to find or to figure out what it is that's depriving you of joy or suppressing your feelings of joy? Is that an easy thing to do?
Generally, it's more than one thing. I think in many circumstances, if you can identify on your own, this job is difficult or this relationship is difficult and it's taking away from my joy, then you can think about changing that. What I see often is a very complicated mix of events. And when people generally have resilience, and when there's one event after the other, things come in threes, for example, then people start losing their ability to feel joy and to feel hopeful to get through it. So very individual.
Dr. Stephanie Collier is our guest. She's Director of Education in the Division of Geriatric Psychiatry at McLean Hospital. It's part of Harvard University. We're talking about joy, and we will continue our conversation in just a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest today is Dr. Stephen Collier, Director of Education at McLean Hospital at Harvard University. She's here to talk about joy, and this is kind of part, an extension of WFAE's Finding Joy series, in which we asked a couple of Charlatteans what gives them joy. And here's what a few of them had to say.
I'm Andrew, and I live in Lower South End, so like right around Woodlawn area. I guess it would be my dog. He's just a bundle of joy. He's always got a happy face, smile, you know? He's just a good boy, so I love him.
Donna Reed, and I live right here in Charlotte, North Carolina. Love playing board games. I think it's something that brings people together. It makes you think, but it is also a lot of fun. And I think spending time with our young people, I think that is so important.
DeMonte Lee, North Lake. When I play basketball, it opens. Well, it frees my mind of like a lot of stress or stuff that I'm thinking about. Another thing I say is music. That's another way of me dealing with stuff, just listening to music, making music.
So, Dr. Collier, several people talk about music giving them joy. What is it about music, whether you make it or you just sit down and listen to it, that lifts your spirits? What is it? What's going on there?
Everyone has their musical preferences, but there is something that can be calming or invigorating. There's something about arts in general that bring us to a different mindset. It's not the same as meditation or mindfulness, but sometimes it gives you a pause and it can produce emotions. And it's the separation from your daily life for some people. They have a break, they listen to music, and they immediately feel an effect, whether it's calming them, invigorating them, or bringing out other memories.
And one of the folks in that little clip of sound we played from our series talked about his dog. Pets seem to bring people a lot of joy. Whether dogs can really smile or not is debatable, I suppose, but they do bring you joy. Why? Do we understand what's going on there?
So we know that joy is related to meaningful relationships. And that's not just with humans. You can have a relationship with your dog. There's something about our mirror neurons. Basically, when we see someone who's laughing or smiling or a dog that's wagging their tail, we feel the pleasure of someone or some animal as well. So we're able to use joy to help our communal reactions.
Feeling joy isn't just because we want to walk around in a state of permanent euphoria, I suppose. It's actually physically beneficial. It's not just mentally beneficial. It actually helps us physically. Our immune systems evidently can be strengthened by our mental state. What's happening there? Is it a chemical thing? What's happening there?
So we do know that with joy, we produce more immunoglobulins, which can help fight off infection. We also lower some of our hormones, some of the stress hormones like cortisol, which has a secondary effect on the immune system. So we're basically strengthening our bodies in addition to our minds when we experience prolonged joy.
A lot was made about the impact that the COVID pandemic had on people's mental wellness and how we all found ourselves living boring and joyous lives because we had to shed all of the normality that we'd experienced in our entire lives. It all completely went away. We had to abandon friends and be by ourselves. We couldn't go out to eat. We couldn't socialize. We had to socially distance. One national poll, however, contradicts I think overall we thought, well, we're joyless, and it's going to take a long time to get it back. But one national poll released in August of 2021 indicated that 83% of adults over 50 during the pandemic had felt some or a lot of joy during that time. How do you explain that? Well, I mean, what impact do you think it had on our ability to experience joy, that pandemic, and have all the, and are there lingering effects to the pandemic today?
Well, the pandemic was an extreme level of stress, and for many, it's a level of trauma. However, we do know that older adults in general are often very resilient. This might not be their first trauma, and they may have developed coping skills that helped them in the past that they were able to use. And for some people, the pandemic, when they're working, had a larger disruption. When they're at home, they may have learned how to utilize technology. They weren't driving to begin with, perhaps. Perhaps they had family members move in for extra support. There are very different individual circumstances that older adults also experience differently than younger adults.
And could it be that in the normal world prior to the pandemic, a lot of people got happiness or joy, or thought they did, out of partying, about going out and being with people all the time, of having a jam-packed schedule? That all went away in the pandemic. Could some of the joy that people report having experienced during the pandemic actually been because they were alone and with themselves, and they found out they liked themselves?
So that is one possibility, but there are so many pathways to joy. For some people, it might have given them the space to form greater connections, to have more meaningful connections than going to a party. For example, they might have developed their spirituality, or they may have strengthened other connections from family or friends, a smaller group of people. But there are so many factors that can affect joy that that's probably one of many.
If you think that there are a lot of things about the pandemic that have had lingering effects, many people think it's gone, it's in the history books, but there's things that are still part of the problem, inflation being one of them. But if you think that there are lingering effects from this pandemic that have to do with joy or a lack of joy, why isn't the understanding that we're no longer wearing masks, we're no longer social distancing, people are not dying by the thousands every day, restaurants and movie theaters and bars and other places are open now, why isn't that enough to help us immediately snap back to where we were before?
Well, there were so many effects that have not bounced back. People are still unemployed. People have had...
But not many.
Yes.
Not many.
But they may have not returned to exactly where they were before. Mm-hmm. They may have developed complications on their brain from the virus too. And long COVID can lead to multiple medical conditions, including depression and persistent fatigue. There are many other direct effects from the virus too that have affected people. And then there's the question of, well, how has the support changed over time? And the pandemic has disrupted the fabric of families, and many people have lost loved ones. And we can't just say, oh, they bounce back right away. Sometimes it does take years. And with the younger generation, also the disruption from school has caused extra stresses, and the switch to electronics and virtual teaching environments, that all has downstream effects as well. So a lot of the stresses are still there.
We have an email question from one of our listeners who says, I've noticed my mother has had a lack of joy. We don't live geographically close, so how can I support her from afar? How do you encourage someone else to find joy?
That's a good question. So especially if they live far away, one of the dangers is isolation. We know that for joy, one of the most important ways to cultivate it is to have social relationships and to improve those relationships. So making sure people are not alone can be very helpful. Guiding them to the purposes that they find valuable can be very helpful. And depending on where exactly she lives, spending time in nature, connecting with the arts, finding the right balance between, you know, if she's working and leisure and resting, all of those can be helpful.
As I've been listening to you talk about this, one word keeps popping up and I want to bring attention to it. And that word is purpose. Is that the key to being joyful, to having purpose in your life, no matter what that purpose happens to be?
I still think it's a little bit more complicated. Okay. We know purpose and joy are linked. And one of the best ways to cultivate joy is to align your life with purpose. And that's not sufficient. There might be other strong contributors why someone might not experience joy. And that could range from multiple social stressors to feeling overwhelmed to having mental illness. So purpose, I say, is very important and not sufficient.
So there is a physical component, a positive physical component to being able to find joy in your life. And you say that finding joy can help you live longer. The journal Science quotes a study that found that those in better moods were 35% less likely to die in the next 5 years. Why?
That's a fantastic question. I'm not sure we know the answer to that. And correlation is not causation as well, but they did try to control in that study for multiple factors. Generally, when someone's feeling well, experiencing joy, feeling happy, they're able to build and expand what they do. They're able to engage in hobbies. They're able to spend time with people. They might be able to try new activities. They might be physically more active. There are so many ways that those are all beneficial on the body and life expectancy. Fight off illness better. But how that mechanism exactly works, I don't think we know.
Is there a flip side to that? I mean, if there's a positive impact of feeling joy and happiness, what is the impact of a lack of joy on your physical health and your long-term mental health? I mean, how detrimental is it?
Yeah. So if joy persists, we spoke earlier about the effects on the immune system, so you're more susceptible to illness. But also, we think that there is a relationship between mental state and multiple physical complaints, including cancers and dementias. Basically, the physical and mental are not two separate entities. They affect each other on multiple levels, and it is very, very complicated, and we don't understand exactly how that works. But generally, when people are not feeling as well, they are less physically active. And so one of the pieces of advice that I give my patients who are not doing well, who are not experiencing joy, usually because of depression or a neurocognitive disorder, I say, do some physical activity, get out of the house, get some fresh air. The more aerobic activity or even other activities that you're able to do, the positive effects on your mind and body, they work together to help break the cycle sometimes.
I've heard that a billion times, that diet and exercise, but a lot mostly exercise, because it clears the fog from the brain, and it actually is pumping blood through your brain, which seems to give you a better outlook on life. But we don't understand fully what's going on there, do we?
So we don't fully understand the brain, but we do know that increased physical activity is almost like a bubble bath of neurotransmitters. You're releasing endorphins and dopamine and serotonin, and those are all neurotransmitters that are involved in feeling good at the moment. But we also know that that persists. So there are changes to your brain that happen with repeated activity. Even a few weeks of really changing physical activity has these long-lasting benefits, also on memory and attention. So there are a lot of benefits for physical activity.
NPR reported on a research initiative called the Big Joy Project. In this project, people participated, I think, for 7 consecutive days, during which each day they did something like something as simple as making a gratitude list, or they performed a kind act for someone else, or they took time to celebrate somebody else's joy, or to point out the silver lining in a bad experience for themselves or others. And this study found that people who commit daily micro acts of joy experience about a 25% increase in emotional well-being over the course of that 7 days. You're nodding your head in recognition. I was going to ask you if that surprised you. Clearly not. Why doesn't it surprise you, and what's at work here?
So one of the best ways to cultivate joy is to have gratitude. That is something you have to learn how to do. And when you put your energy into helping other people, you also have long-lasting benefits. We know that having a pleasurable experience actually wears away at you over time. So the same positive experience, I don't know, the same toy or the same bonus will reduce your own satisfaction. But when you help someone else, that persists, and that does not diminish over time. So that's one of the best ways to remain well.
Is that because for that moment in time, you are taking yourself out of yourself and not focusing on your situation or your troubles, but on somebody else, and helping them makes you feel good about yourself?
I'm not sure if it's that you're feeling as good about yourself. I think you actually experience joy when someone else does well, when they experience joy. Back to the mirror neurons. You're feeling good for someone else. It's not just because you're feeling good about yourself. It's about the action that provides a deeper meaning for you.
But that seems counterintuitive, given the fact that we're told that people who consume a lot of social media and they watch their friends buying new clothes and riding in new cars and taking fabulous vacations actually depresses them because you're not living the great life.
Yes. So if you're the one causing the benefit in your friend, you will feel good about it. If you are helping someone, if you're volunteering, if you are doing something that brings a smile to someone else's face, you will experience joy. If you're just watching someone else's smile, you're not going to feel the same level of joy, and that's not going to provide the same level over time.
More of our exploration of joy coming up with Dr. Stephanie Collier from McLean Hospital at Harvard University in a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Dr. Stephanie Collier with McLean Hospital, part of Harvard University. She's Director of Education in the Division of Geriatric Psychiatry. And this is kind of an offshoot of WFAE's Finding Joy series, in which our reporters looked for stories in which individuals find joy by giving or creating joy in others. You can hear that series by going to our website, but let me give you just a little taste of it right now.
One of the hottest newcomers in the world of rap lives in Salisbury, and she just recently learned how to write her own name. Savannah McConaughey is 5 years old. She goes by the name Van Van on TikTok and Instagram, where her rap videos have attracted millions of views. First I wake up, then I brush my teeth. I
put on my toes, then I put on my sneakers. They're here to usher in the Year of the Dragon with a beloved tradition, the Lion Dance. This performance was one of many by the local Vietnamese cultural group Queen City Lion Dance throughout the weekend to celebrate the Lunar New Year. The group's leader, Caden Tran, said they were booked more than ever this year.
We did a total of 20 performances of just this weekend, which is approximately almost double of what we did last year.
Stepping inside Bojangles Coliseum for a Checkers hockey game is a full sensory experience. There's the brisk chill that hits your face from the ice, the buttery smell of treats, and the tang of beer from the concession stands. The shouts of encouragement from passionate fans. And from section 127, the sweet sounds of a rumbling organ. And the man behind the music.
My name is Jason Atkins, a.k.a. Greasy Keys. I'm the organist for the Charlotte Checkers hockey team, also organist for the Kannapolis Cannonballers baseball team, and occasionally for the Charlotte Knights baseball team.
The mighty Wurlitzer, the power of the mighty Wurlitzer there. You can hear our entire Finding Joy series on our website at WFAE.org. We're here talking about it with Dr. Stephanie Collier right now. We were mentioning this Big Joy project that NPR reported on a couple of months ago. One professor of psychiatry at the University of California told NPR that when people intentionally plan out a daily micro act of finding or giving joy, it may help them feel as though they have more control over their emotions. And so here they have a feeling of agency, and that could be one of the reasons they feel better. What has agency got to do with it?
Sometimes people feel overwhelmed by the world, and knowing that you are in control of even something small that has a positive benefit, that can bring joy. So agency is really that feeling of internal control that what you want to do, you can do.
Well, that makes perfect sense to me, actually, because we do feel powerless sometimes, and that makes us depressed. And if you take control of something, anything, then you feel better about yourself. It is clear from that study and others like it that you don't have to win the lottery or buy a new car or buy a new wardrobe to find joy. Joy can come and does come in the littlest of things. How do we learn to take joy from those actions, those little things? How do we find out what works for us?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we all have the ability to find joy from small, little interactions that provide opportunities to experience joy, but a lot of us don't really notice them. There are numerous events during a day that are positive, and they might be overshadowed by negative experiences. One way to counteract this is actually putting up your feelers and looking for those moments where you actually have noticed positive things going on during your day. There's an exercise that I often recommend to patients, which is just to write down a couple good things that happened during the day, because it's not about just writing it down. It's about the next day you're looking for those good things during the day that can give you momentary experiences that are positive. And when you reflect and think about the positives during your day, you actually feel much, much better. So just doing that for a few weeks, I say do it for 2 weeks, write down at least 3 things that went well, but not just write down a sentence, write down about everything you can about that moment, how you felt, why you felt that way, what else you noticed, and then really think about that. Sometimes before bed, it'll put you in a different frame of mind to experience the next day.
And if you're skeptical that little things can make you feel joy because it's that those words are coming from an expert, a so-called expert, if that makes you skeptical, when WFAE's Finding Joy series went out on the street and asked people how they found joy, many of them pointed to those little things.
Derek Dillard, and I live here in Charlotte, North Carolina. I guess volunteering. Giving back to the community. My parents always taught me, you know, give back. And that just brings me joy to know that I'm doing things that my parents have instilled into me of giving back.
My name is Crystal, and I'm here in Charlotte, uptown. I would definitely say those little moments you get with, like, your significant other, like my husband. We watch Married at First Sight every Wednesday night, 8 o'clock. Like, that's our thing. I think, like, doing that and just relaxing for a second really brings us joy.
Jim Edgington, Dilworth. Quite honestly, walking the dog because it's a break from thinking about everything else. And he likes to wander around and smell everything, so you can't even walk fast. You just have to wander and relax.
You, Dr. Collier, list several different ways to rediscover joy, and among them are some of the things that were just mentioned in those clips. Physical activity, volunteering. You even suggest NPR's joy generator, which I went to yesterday and couldn't figure out. I'm not smart enough to, I guess. Talk about some of those things that can really give you joy, and they're simple.
Yeah, and back to what you mentioned earlier, it's really paying selective attention to the positive pieces. So if you're going through the day, you want to find the little bits that make you happy and pay attention to them. Very often, the positives are overshadowed by negatives. So if you're experiencing a hard day or job stress, you might miss out on the positives during the day. So shifting your attention is really important. And some of the listeners mentioned that, you know, spending time with the dog, going for a walk, that helps them just hold on the moment and enjoy the experiences that they're feeling. And I think it's not just paying attention, but also not judging. Just being there in that moment, because our brains, they generate worries, they generate negative thoughts when they're left to their own. But learning to bring those thoughts back just to the present moment. Sometimes paying attention to breathing, which is again part of mindfulness and meditation, focusing on the sensation of your breaths in and out, that can help bring the moment back. Volunteering, we talked about earlier, helping other people. So focusing attention on others and doing things that produce happiness in others, of course, that's helpful long term because you're experiencing something bigger than just momentary happiness. Experiencing gratitude, developing meaningful relationships, increasing opportunities for social connections, all of those combined. And the problem is when people are not feeling well because they're feeling depressed or they've had some significant life traumas, it's really breaking the cycle of isolation and going out and taking that walk, feeling the wind, feeling the sunshine, and coming back just a moment to appreciate the situation without judging themselves.
One of the things that you've written about, but we haven't talked about yet, is discovering something new can be a joy generator. You said that the humans are hardwired to experience novelty. Talk about that.
Yeah, so novelty is interesting because novelty is something we need to survive. We look for food in new places. So novelty brings us momentary pleasure. And when we're feeling well, we want to experience more novelty. So it's a little bit of a positive cycle. Even when people experience something new and they have sort of a bad experience, they tend to remember the experience as more positive when it's a new experience. So there is something about finding novelty, whether it's a new hobby, whether it's travel, whether it's a new relationship, but that keeps you on your toes, but it also generates feel-good hormones.
There are many things that can suppress joy, I suppose, that over which you have control or have no control. Some of them are environmental, but some of them are related to medications that we're taking for certain conditions, including the medication that you take for depression. It can make you depressed. It can blunt your feelings of joy. What do you do about that if you're on this medication because you have to be?
Yeah. Well, the first question is, do you have to be on that medication? Sometimes people are feeling depressed or they're feeling anxious and they get placed on medications to help them treat their depression or anxiety. However, they might experience side effects. And one of the side effects people should know about is that it may cause emotional blunting. So this feeling that you're not experiencing your full range of emotions. And sometimes the medications like the SSRIs are used to help with anxiety, to bring down that level of anxiety and intense emotion. But if people experience the opposite, it might be the medication effect. When that happens, sometimes it's related to the dose, and just lowering the dose a little bit can help with some of that blunting. Other times you just switch to another medication, usually from a different class of medications, and that can help bring back the feelings that may have been blunted by the medication. That's a very, very important point for listeners to think about, because it might really be the medications. Hmm.
Are there certain ages at which we either experience more joy or we experience less joy? For instance, it seems to me that teenagers feel every emotion acutely, and they're subjected to real highs and real lows because everything is a tragedy or the most exciting thing that ever happened to them. Does that change over time? Are older people more affected by, say, depression or a lack of joy than younger people?
Yeah. So if we just go by population level data, yes, there are differences between different ages, and actually joy does dip in the teenage years, exactly. But we also know that People experience joy in different ways, and people have different levels of resilience. What you mentioned earlier about the COVID pandemic, older adults actually did surprisingly well in many ways in terms of their mental health in response to this stressor. So joy is not something that necessarily decreases with age, although it can. And also, as people age, they have changes to their brain. They might develop, you know, normal aging, but they also might develop neurocognitive disorders. They might develop dementia or other problems thinking. They might develop depression, anxiety. All of those can affect their experience of joy. So they might have vascular, so blood vessel problems that cause other further neurological complications. So there are many medical reasons as well that older adults might not experience the same level of joy that's separate from what younger adults, for example, might experience.
And I think there's something to glean from the fact that a lot of older people, when asked, would you like to go back and be 25 or 30 or 35 again, they will say, oh, no, I never want to go back to that. So maybe it does, in fact, get better with age in some ways. There are, I'm going to close with this, because there are a lot of angry people in this country right now. Their personal circumstances and personal economies are making them angry. Politics makes them angry. The news makes them angry. And some of that anger stems from fear that is being ginned up by individuals, politicians, news outlets for gain or profit. It's not real, but you think it is because you hear it every day, all day, and it makes you angry. It's difficult to be joyous when you are angry. So what do you suggest to people who want to stay informed because they want to vote accurately in an election season, but it just makes them ticked off?
In that case, I would say take that anger, funnel it, and put it into purpose. So feeling overwhelmed by the news will only hurt you. But if you take your anger and you work together with others to make change, to vote, to increase access to whatever you need, then you have that sense of purpose, and perhaps even you'll be able to find joy again.
Dr. Stephanie Collier, I wish us well during this upcoming 6 or 7 months to November or whatever it is, because we're going to need the help to find that joy in life, I think. Dr. Stephanie Collier, our guest, Director of Education in the Division of Geriatric Psychiatry at McLean Hospital, part of Harvard University. Thank you so much for the hour.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.